And I want to thank you in advance for a love offering, as certainly was not expected. Nor did I pray about it. The doctor sat with me, and he has five times, to try to figure out in North America where I could go, where we had no friends, where we had no work. You try to figure it out. For 9 months, I prayed off and on about where I should go. My nervous system is in bad shape. And off and on, I've been praying about Hawaii. We have a work in Honolulu. Cecil and Thelma Davidson, who are very close to my heart, but who would protect me with their life. And I called them the other day because my fleece to the Lord was that I'll know if it's to be Hawaii if you give to me a round trip ticket paid for. Hard. Nobody knew I had been praying, not a living soul. And it happened. I've been in Hawaii many times, and I can get lost there. I mean, nobody knows me. I can, you know, you dress casually there, and I walk 2 miles a day, and I jog a half a mile every day. So that's what I'll be doing, only I'm going to get it up to 8 miles of walking, and I have to do it slowly. And this has all come on since I rarely ever react to any bad news. But something happened when I got word that my brother-in-law and my beloved sister were in the same hospital. And something happened with my breastbone, and it turned out to be angina pectoris. 4 members of my family, 5 counting my father, have died of heart attacks. So my doctor, who is a marvelous man of God, said, I don't think you need any other message. So he put me on some medication, sent me to Penrose Hospital to 3 sets of three heart specialists, not 3 sets. And they put me on a treadmill. But they found nothing wrong. I came out in nothing wrong, absolutely nothing wrong. So my doctor immediately took me off of the medication, and I haven't had a pain since. Either God healed my body, or the medication took care of it, or what I did in resting took care of it. So, he that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin. If you're going to put out money for a doctor, you better do what he says. And I have some eyes watching me. When you have adult children, you better obey. First of all, Vanjie sent a very special message to you, every one of you. She loves you dearly, and she misses you greatly, and she longed to be here. And she said to tell you that she loves you with all of her heart, and daily, she said many times a day, you're in her prayers. She sent a very special message to Harv and Maydell, and a very special message to you. And I said, I'd love to give it. And that's it. She loves you and is praying for you. She's victorious as the day is long, has a tremendous ministry on the Glen. A godly woman, if there ever was one, is Vanjie. I love her dearly. And you talk about serving. and a servant's heart. That's one. I've learned some things from Vanjie. I always move on the Glen when our board meeting and the president's developing council meets. I'm invited to those, to the president's council, and I move out to the Bighorn. It's called our new build, one of our new buildings, and Vanjie's in charge of all the girls on the Glen. And so she's in charge of the girls who keep the bedrooms in the Bighorn. And I walked in one day, and here's a basket of fruit and a lovely bouquet. I had been at a luncheon at the Pink House, and there were three bouquets on the table, and that was one of them. And it was Vanjie. Heart. Great heart. I hardly know where to start because God has definitely laid on my heart that I am not to share with you what I'd planned in the way of a message. So let's just quietly depend on Him and see what He has for us. 13 hours before Dawson died, you see, we'd been up all night because on Father's Day, which was the day before he drowned, I had spent 2 hours alone by the very water where he drowned, alone with God. And I had closed my Bible, and I said, you know, Lord, Doss is my beloved, and I'm crazy about him. And this is Father's Day. I mean, this was Father's Day that I was praying. This is Father's Day, and all the children remembered him. And with gifts and cards, which I hadn't given to him yet, and I had a gift and a card. But I want something from your heart to mine that I can share with him. Well, I turned to 2 Kings, the second chapter, which you heard Harvey not refer to, but talk about Elisha and Elijah and passing the mantle down from one to the other because he was leaving for home. And I didn't like what I read, and I didn't like what I heard. Now, up to this time, I had mentally made fun of people who had a vision and who just came right out and said, God told me. You know, not everyone, but now and then I did. And I received a whipping. And I promised God that as long as I had breath, I would never criticize another saint of God who had anything, any vision or didn't have one or was trying to get one or praying through, whatever they're doing. It's none of my business. I just better stay out of it. So I closed my Bible and, you know, have you ever done it? You've asked God for direction and you don't like what you read, so you're going to just find something else. So that's what I did. Do you know my Bible turned to 2 Kings, the second chapter? Mm-hmm. And God very definitely spoke to my heart that he was going to take Dawson home. And the 10th verse of 2 Kings, the second chapter, says, you know, you've asked a very hard thing of me. And he had. Because to him I said, you know, I haven't done it with him. How on earth can I do without him? By that I meant I hadn't been the wife that the word of God instructed me. Oh, I had been faithful, yes. And I had performed my duty, yes. Now, Dawson would tell it differently. But I know me. And the Lord very gently said, you'll walk alone, but I'll never leave you. So I did something for a long time I felt guilty of, but I'm very glad now, and have been for years, that God led me to do it. And that is that for an hour and 17 minutes, I counted the cost. because Doss and I had made plans that when the children were gone, I would be traveling with him. I could hardly wait, you know. Our invalid child, we placed him. We started the papers when he was 11 months old, and he wasn't taken to the state hospital till he was 8 years and 4 months. And when we got ready, when the state takes your loved one, you have to go to court. And 6 weeks later, you have to go back. And both of those, you take your loved one with you. That's to be placed. And it's tough. Dawson was hit on the head as he sat in court by the biggest man I've ever seen, who did not know what he was doing. And I have since talked to the two judges in our locale where we were living then. Just talked it over with him. Wondered if there wasn't another way it could be done. But what they do, they investigate you thoroughly. And when they investigated us, they told us that our boy would be far better off here than he would be with 99 others. And we knew that. We definitely knew that. But we had 4 other children, and we were so afraid that they would suffer. And then I had gotten to the palsy stage, where I had to sign my check with an X with the bank's permission, because I couldn't write. I was so shaky. My whole body was. So when we got ready to take him, Dawson and I were taking him alone. Bruce was stepped out, our son, our oldest son, to take a picture of our boy. And he was a beautiful child. Had the longest eyelashes I've ever seen on anyone. And I had him dressed beautifully. And Dawson said to me, almost broken, "Sweetheart, I can't go. I can't do it. Can't go." It was 50 miles. So, Waldron Scott's wife, Joan Hatch, was my helper then. And Helen Staffstrom, who is Johnny Crawford's wife, went with me. And I am so grateful that Doss did not have to witness what we did. I'll be eternally grateful. They told us where to go to stand, and that one of the inmates would be coming for him. And here this fellow came with a wheelchair with no cushion in it. Our child couldn't sit up. He never, ever had sat up. So I said, "Sir, could we just put the chair down like this, and I go take this blanket and lay it down, and you put my son on it?" And he grew in length this way, but not in size. His head was normal in size, but not his arms and legs. Well, to stand there, the three of us, speechless, and watch him, I wondered when I saw him if he'd know what to do. This is my child. And we had already told officials that we would not be visiting him very often, because it would be just harder on us and would do the baby no good. He didn't know us anyway. Well, we were unusual, they told us, because parents wear us out. Costly, yes, very costly. I carried that baby for 9 months, and it was very precious to us. But I will always be grateful that I think he would have broken. I really do. So God was good. Well, the morning that I spent with the Lord and he spoke to me, I went to our meeting that Ruthie and a fellow served us breakfast in bed. Ruthie was going to serve us breakfast, and Doss had no idea that a strange fellow would be walking into our room, our cabin, which bothered him no end. He just hated for anyone to see him in bed being served. So I asked Doss if it would be all right if I just left him in the room and just go my way. And that's when I wanted to spend time with the Lord. Well, I went to the meeting at 11 o'clock meeting, and at 11:30 Dawson was to speak. And 11:30 came, and Doss wasn't there. Didn't come in. So I said, Lord, has he been taken already? So when he walked in, it was just like he came back from the dead. Really? Well, it proved later that his watch was wrong. He was never late. Just never late. Well, he gave one of the most powerful messages on the quiet time that I had ever heard. And unfortunately, the fellow that was running it ran it over another message. So we never ever had that message on tape. When it was over with, Walter and Scott walked up to Dawson, and they were over at the piano. And so I walked up, and I said, sweetheart, I think your watch is wrong, isn't it? And he looked and whistled, this shrill whistle he had, and said, everybody go right now because they don't like you late for lunch. I said, would you like me to save your place? Now, the first 2 days of any conference where I attended with Dawson, we ate together, talked, held hands, everything, so everybody know we loved each other, you know, and we were still speaking. We got along. Then we separated. Then we had things to share with each other from our table conversation or the lives. And I don't know why I said it, but I did. He said, yes, I'll be right along. Well, he never came. And I had an appointment with a girl afterwards. And so when it was over with, I walked down to our cabin that was down by the lake. And right now, I can hear the speedboat with Jack Wurtson at the helm and Dawson water skiing with him. I knew that they were going. And when Jack Wurtson walked up to our cabin to find us, he was sitting in our car reading Power Through Prayer by E.R. Bounds. And Jack said, if you could have a wish, Doss, what would it be? And he says, well, I just have a real yearning to snuggle up to the heart of God. So they went water skiing, and Dawson did the skiing, and they went 35 to 50 miles an hour. He was already worn out, and that finished him. And I was told later that he couldn't even climb up on the small wharf. He was so tired. But he asked Jack to come back to shore and let's take anyone that's there and give them a free ride while we have time. So they did. And then they went back to get the second load. And that's when the two girls were on in the boat that couldn't swim, and Dawson was an expert swimmer. So he sat between the two girls up in the front seat and with Jack at the helm. And when a speedboat takes off, it raises from the water. You can't see over, so Dawson put three cushions that were life preservers under the three of them, sat between the two girls and put his arms in theirs and held their wrists. So if they slipped or anything, he could catch them. Well, I didn't know until the first anniversary after that, after the first year, I was back up there for Dawson's anniversary, homegoing. And I didn't know till then what Dawson's last words were. And they were this: let's go back and get Lila. And that's why Jack turned to go back and to get Lila. And that day, there were caps, white caps all over the lake. The lake is over 200 miles long, and it's different names, different sections. And this is Scroon Lake. Up in the Adirondacks, just 30 miles south of Canada, border of Canada. And the water was cold, and it isn't salty. at all. If it was salty, it has a buoyancy and would have held them up, perhaps. But when he turned, Dawson and Eileen slipped out of the boat. He had just met her. He did not know her at all. She was 21 years old, and it's Aileen, A-I-L-E-N-E, Beck. She was then. And Dawson held her up, and Aileen told me 3 days later, when they found her, that she felt his body go down hers. I was actually feeding Ruthie in a cabin, Ruthie's cabin, when Dawson's acting secretary, who's Dorothy Dottie Anderson today, came to tell me, the minute I heard her breathe, this girl breathing, I didn't know who it was, like that, I knew that Doss was gone. So she stepped into our room and said, Lila, Dawson fell out of the boat. And Ruthie raised up, and she has big eyes anyway, but they got big, and she said, is he all right? And Dottie said, well, they haven't found him yet. And she just started panicking. I said, just a minute, sweetheart. Let's pray. So we prayed, and I did not know until then that there was anyone else in the room. There were many double bunks in this room, and all the top bunks, heads came over, and eyes. So I had prayer with her, and then I hurried down with Dottie to the shore. Dottie said, Lila, if you'll excuse me, I'd like to go pray. And I said, what are you going to be praying about? She said, about Doss, meeting some girls. And I said, well, it's too late. Don't pray for Doss. You can pray for the loved ones that are left, but not for Doss. You can turn that into praise. I did not realize that I had said that till a year later when Lauren and I were on our way up to Maine with George and Ruth and Dottie. And that's when she told us in the car what I had said. And everybody was shocked but me. And I've always praised God that he just let me in on part of the secret. I don't know why. I've been asked why. And I used to think it was a sin to say why. But until I realized that Jesus did on the cross. He said, Father, why hast thou forsaken me? He had to do it alone. And he did it for you and me. And to God's glory, and to God's glory alone, the way you see me now, is just exactly the way I reacted when I got the word and saw with my own eyes. 5 months prior to this, I had a team of girls from the Glen with me in the car. We were on the East Coast, and I saw a headline that, and it was snowing, but I stopped and ran over and bought that paper. It was about a picture the size of my Bible, like this, the front of my Bible, the leaf, of the five widows of the five men who were murdered by the Aqua Indians in January of 1956. And as I studied that picture on the front there, and I knew three of these girls quite well, I thought, it just haunted me the rest of the day. Well, when the girls went to bed in the motel that night, I went walking. I wouldn't do it now. Not with what we know is existing now, but I did then. And I've written a portion of two prayers in my lifetime in my Bible. Both of them affected our home and our lives. And part of the prayer was, Lord, once again, I want to give back to you our precious children and my beloved Dawson. To do with what you deem best, be it by life or by death. If it's by death, I want the same testimony that seemingly these girls have in this picture. I want that same serenity. And if you would give me that, eternity would not be long enough for me to praise your name. Believe it or not, the first thing that came to my mind when I got the word was of these five women and my prayer. And I knew that however I reacted, my children would react. You see, they reflect us, and we must reflect the Father at any cost. There's not a thing wrong with tears. Not a thing, if they're used right. You know, God deems them precious enough to bottle them up. If we use our tears to get our own way, or in a tantrum, or in a fit, or self-pity, no, he doesn't bother to put those in a bottle. But he drowned at 20 minutes to 4 on Monday, the day after Father's Day. Only one child was there, and that was Ruth. And she and George wanted to see us because they had fallen in love. And they wanted our 100% blessing. And Dawson said for me to tell the children, if they'd been listening, they'd have gotten it. But he said, tell the children, I'll see them Wednesday. And I did. I told them that before he died. Well, they were engaged at midnight that night, the night that he drowned. And here I am facing the press that until 4:30 in the morning, and they were most unkind. And they were making such a play because Dawson was a member of Billy Graham's team. And the first report was that it was suicide by the press. And so it took some time to straighten this out. In the midst of keeping your head in balance and your heart right and not pumping too fast or too slow, and your beloved is home, my children walk into my room, George and Ruth, to announce their engagement. And I rejoiced with them. I was thrilled, very thrilled. Well, they looked for Dawson until 9:30 that night. They realized that after 5:30 or when the sun goes down, that it casts shadows and you can't see anything under the water. So all the next day, starting very early in the morning, they looked for him. There was a patrol car that pulled up, and I was put in this patrol car. I was wrapped in a blanket and brought food. I do not like attention. I'm very warm-blooded, and who could eat? And when these two men who had been on the beat there for 23 years, they were officers, found out that I could talk about my husband, well, they talked to me and said that a man had drowned 2 years prior to this and they've never found his body. And so I just thanked the Lord forearmed. What's the first of that? To be forewarned is to be forearmed. So I just thanked him for telling me in advance. Well, all day Wednesday, and here I'm sitting, watching all of this activity. Every craft, everybody was taken absolutely off of the water for just miles. And they were out there with tongues. This looked like a wagon tongue with huge graving hooks like this, grappling for Dawson's body in case it should come to the surface. But it didn't. And they looked for him all day Wednesday. And there were two young fellas miles down who were eating breakfast and heard on the radio in that, or on the TV in that eating place, that a man had drowned at Word of Life, and one of the fellows said, and they were on their way to Canada to look for a body where a reward was offered. And one of the fellows said, my mother gives to Word of Life. So let's stop in and see if we can help. So actually, Ruthie and I, we all passed him, all but the boys. And because of all the children got in by Wednesday, about 1 o'clock. And went out to where Dad drowned so they could get the feel of it. And when I left home, Faithy was just getting over a tonsillectomy. And I had just finished 21,000 miles of driving. And this was the end of May. And so the first part of June, Dawson asked me to meet him there. And he said, and by the way, I'd like you to handle the girls' work, handle the girls while you're there. So I just took a manila folder and put some notes in it and put two or three poems. And he said, and I'd like you to go with three fellas. I had never done it up till then, and I haven't done it since. But it was of God. Leroy Imes was one of them. Norman Larson, who accompanied Dawson's body home, was the other. And Joe Schenkel. No, that's wrong. Yes, it was Joe Schenkel. And Will Hopkins. It was four fellows. So Dawson wanted me to go with him so because I wouldn't have to drive this way because I was worn out. Well, I just, another fellow and I did the driving. I learned something about men. And we played tricks on them, too. But they are my friends, still are. Well, we were detained 1 week because of the weather, and we couldn't get out by plane. So we entered into Coast to Coast broadcast with Jack Wurtson, Charlie and Grace Fuller, were on their way in the line of duty, but not because of Dawson's drowning. They were miles down south when Charlie heard that Dawson had drowned, and he went over and raised the window and said, looked up into the heavens and said, Lord, why Doss? Why not me? And I love their home with the Lord. I love them dearly. And it was like the balm of Gilead just walked into my life. The next morning after Dawson drowned, Jim Downing arrived in the line of duty. He came up to speak and to see Dawson about coming back with the navigators. So when he did not know he drowned till he walked on the property, and so he said, well, I might as well leave. It was quite a while before he got to me, but that's what he said to me. Because of the 225,000 souls that I asked God to give Dawson, what he didn't lead to Christ in his lifetime, he will through his death. So there's nothing else to do. So I might as well, oh no, you're not going. Mm-mm. You stay right here. This is where you belong, right here. Well, in my motel room, right here in the city, I have a letter from Jim Downing, and a very long one from Billy Graham, written the next day after Dawson drowned. And they're priceless. Priceless. Billy phoned, wanted to send Ruth, his wife, and I said, selfishly, I would love to have her. But I'm telling you that God is the God of the impossible, and I just don't need anybody, really. God. You know, D.L. Moody, 100 years before Dawson was gone, which is almost 22 years now ago, said this. You know, you don't need dying grace until you're dying. And you know, it's something that you and I cannot pray for right now. Where would we, there's no place to appropriate it. Where would you put it? You know, it's not going to hang around waiting for you to go. You don't need dying grace until you're dying. And I'm here to tell you, he has plenty of grace, sufficient amount of grace with much left over. Much. And I was warned that my first year would be my hardest, because I have the first of everything to face, first anniversary, first birthday, first this, first. Well, it was a hard year, yes, because so many came to the Glen that summer, and I spent my summer comforting hearts. And having to leave three times because of just wearing out. So I took Joyce, our nurse, who was my helper one of my helpers when Dawson drowned, Joyce Marston. She's now Don Enright's wife. And I had been in bed with tuberculosis, 54 and part of 54 and 55, and I went to bed for 6 months to 3 years, but I was in bed 13 months only. And I have always been very grateful that God put me on my feet before he took Doss home and that I was there. I think it made it so much easier, because I knew it wasn't accidental. I knew God was in it. While I was in bed with tuberculosis, Dawson was sitting between our two large double beds in the pink house, and he was sitting on the floor talking to Los Angeles, California, to Mrs. Kerr of the Kerr jars that we can with. And all of a sudden, something happened to him. So as I lay there, I had tuberculosis, and I lay there and I studied him. I had never ever seen him act or react like this. So when he hung up, I called the doctor. And he came out, and Dawson all but broke. Actually, it was very gracious of God to take him when he did. And to you, that may sound terrible. But to one who lived with this man and knew him like no other, he was on his way to becoming an invalid, I feel sure. And knowing that man like I did, I can hardly see him in bed as an invalid. He would have had all of us warned of Franz's, because his mind just never rested. Never. Never. He just had a sanctified imagination, and I mean he was a man of vision and carried it out. Dawson gave me some warnings the night before he died. You know, I told him while we were eating that I had something to tell him. And he's a very curious man, and he said, good or bad? And I said, both. Well, you want to know right now, you know. Well, I said, let's finish eating and go down by the water, and then I'll tell you. Because all of the major decisions of our lives were made by the water, a body of water. So we did. And so I just told him. I had toyed all afternoon of whether I should tell him or not. And I always came up with a holier-than-thou attitude. I knew something he didn't know, that idea, and it bothered me. It really bothered me. So I just committed to the Lord and left it there. And when my mouth opened and those words came out, I could have just fallen right on the table. It really startled me. So I had to go through with it. So I told him. So he says, "Already, if he told you he's going to take me, when?" You perhaps outlive me by 20 years. Then I got deathly quiet. He said, "You know, I think you're serious." And I said, "Well, next accepting Jesus Christ as my personal Savior and saying yes to you in marriage, I have never been more serious." And he said, "Well, let's do business with God." So he pulled me over close to him, and we went into a prayer meeting the likes of which I've never been in before or since. And halfway through his praying, he took my face in his hands and said, "Sweetheart, you're right. God is going to take me." And I said, "When?" So he changed his prayer from the past and the present to the future. And then he reached over into his valise and took out a pack of 8.5 by 11 and two magazines and gave me a ballpoint pen and shared with me naming six couples and the message that I was to give to them, which changed the course of their lives, and they're all with us yet today. And they are doing exactly what he told me to tell them. He shared with me his next 10-year vision of the Navigators, and he gave me the headlines, and then he gave me the subline, and then told me where to find it. And it took me 1 week to write it. I left the city, and then I left Colorado and had it turned upside down and had them laminated, 42 pages. He also shared with me about my personal life, of thanking me for everything he could think of. And then he sat and dictated a letter to Bruce, who, our oldest son, who had failed twice. He was in the Air Force, and he'd failed two tests that kept him from becoming a pilot. And Doss said in this letter, when you graduate and become a pilot, it's a tearjerker if there ever was one. But he gave him some warnings about his plane. And he gave him some warnings about taking care of his mother. But never, ever ahead of your darling wife and precious son. He had a 5.5-week-old son. Well, I sent this wire to Bruce. It took 3 Western Union pages. And I heard from him. And he said that, you know, Mother, it was just like Dad was standing at the portals of heaven. I could hear him. I could hear him say those exact words. And I'm heartbroken. Because he said, if I ever prayed for you here, and I surely did, I will surely pray for you on the other side. And if I loved you here, my beloved Bruce, my firstborn, I'll pray for you from the other side. And I'll keep watching. Then he gave me some warnings. And he gave me some warnings about Christian leaders. And I thought, isn't this foolish? I thought it. I'll never ever be working with men. Well, I've worked with men ever since Doss has been gone. That I didn't know I would be working with men. But he gave names to me of Christian leaders and warnings. And every warning Dawson gave me came true. So I learned. And those were quiet years for me. I didn't speak up or out. I was all right in my own home, but not outside my home. I did not like attention, and because I was so quiet when we'd go to a home, I got all the tension because they thought I was sick and I didn't know how to master this thing. So I said, all right, Dawson, I'm spent. Let's get down to the bottom of this. And I don't want any frills. I'll take the chills, but I've got to get over this. Okay, Dawson said, I'll be happy to help you. Little did I know he'd been praying, and the fleece was that Lila will come and ask me. If you want to make it tough on yourself, you wives, you go ask your husband. Something about your personal life. They'll tell you. They sure will. If you're in doubt, try it. It'll pay dividends. If you can take it in love and bathe it in prayer and do something about it. Lucy was my helper, along with LaRue Bogue, who is Charlie Riggs' wife now. Lucille was She moved in with us in April, and they were married. She and Lauren were married in June. And then they came back off their honeymoon and lived with us. And she was carrying a little one. This is what I have permission to tell. With 30 people in your home, every time we had scrambled eggs, we broke five dozen eggs. And our skillet was, I have a skillet right now at home, a big skillet, iron skillet. So one morning Dawson said, "Sweetheart, who scrambled the eggs?" Way down at the other end of the table, you know where I was sitting. I didn't say anything. And to my right sat Lorne, and to his right sat his Lucille. So we waited, and Dawson says, "Lila, I ask who scrambled the eggs." Well, I didn't say anything, expecting Lucy to speak up, you know. Dawson said, "This is the last time I'm asking who scrambled the eggs." And Lucy said, "I did. What's wrong with them?" That's just exactly what she did. So Dawson says, "Well, they're too dry." She says, "Well, then scramble them yourself." So Dawson said, "Sweetheart, every time Lucy used to scramble the eggs for the next 4 weeks, and I only serve scrambled eggs twice a week at that time." And he said, "And I want you to have them often." And she said, "If I need any instruction, I have a husband." So he added another week. Well, one day I said to Dawson, "I wish that you could hear Lucy every time she breaks five dozen eggs." I said, "It's an education. I wouldn't miss it." Dumb me, of course, I wasn't thinking of putting it on tape like we would today. So in our home, we had a main staircase, and then we had what they had built for their maid. So Dawson came down the end of the maid steps, and he'll crack the door like this, and he listened. And she didn't know it. And you see, anything she said, I couldn't agree with her at all because it was against Dawson. So I just let her talk, like she's saying, "Well, he ought to come down here and break these eggs, see if he can do any better than I can. He can't do any better than I can, you know. And I don't need this kind of training anyway, you know." Blah, blah, blah. Just on and on. And one morning she got just at one after three, she'd get some shell in it, and that didn't help her any. And I didn't help her at all. And as far as she knew at that time, I didn't even hear her, but I heard every word she uttered. And Dawson got the biggest kick out of it. He really did. And it was ages before we had nerve enough to tell her that he had hurt her. So one day, she'd been scrambling for 3 weeks and 2 days. And she said to Dawson, "Well, how are the eggs?" He said, "They're fine." She said, "Well, you could say so. Encourage a person." Do any of you know Lucille? Doesn't that sound like her? Sure. It's Lucille all over. She's the first lady of the Navigators. Now, and it happened overnight. And my position changed overnight. I think the hardest transition for me was where I knew everything. Everything. I read every letter of Dawson's. I read the answer with the original letter. Every night I got a folder from his secretary with the mail in it. Any messages that came by phone, all foreign reports, all medical reports. I knew what every girl had and what every fellow had and what, And all of a sudden I didn't know anything. And that was one of the hardest things for me. And it wasn't because Lauren didn't want me to know. He just didn't know how, my own life. When he came to the work, Dawson was 35. When Dawson went home, Lauren was 35. Those awful young shoulders for then a worldwide work to fall on. We were in various countries when Doss died. And Lauren was with the Graham team, and he stayed with them almost two and a half years, doing both. But God never makes a mistake, and he never deals in accidents. One of the last things that Doss said to me was, I know that when I die, I have no more influence in your life. But while I'm alive, I'd like to give you some advice. And of course I was anxious to hear. And he didn't say it like that. He said, I'd like to share something from my heart to yours, is actually the way he put it. He said, sweetheart, what I would like for you to do is to be a servant. I don't care who it is. I don't care what denomination it is. I don't care what Christian group it is. I don't care if it's the neighbors, if it's somebody over the pond in a foreign country or in the United States. I just want you to serve. You don't have to agree with them, and you don't have to join them. Just serve them. There's no faster way, said Dawson Trotman, for greatness as a Christ one than to become a servant. And a very dear friend of Lauren's, just recently, in his Bible study group, asked them the question, I want to say it right. As the tape ticks on. A businessman that Lauren Sanney knows real well asked his Bible study group, how can you tell if you have a servant attitude? And the reply was, by the way you react when you're treated like one. Makes sense, doesn't it? Well, I've learned some things about being a servant. Oftentimes you're called to serve the unlovely, the undisciplined, the I could care less attitude, that person that talks about you and you know it and it isn't good. And Dawes said to me, if you can't do it with a perfect heart, don't do it. Perfect heart. Everything reverts back to the heart. Out of the heart come the issues of life. As the heart thinketh, as a man thinketh, so is he. As a woman thinketh, so is she. I have been called on to serve some who are living in sin. They are not married. They're Christians. It does one thing, it reveals me. As a woman thinketh in her heart, so is she. And you know, girls, you and I treat Christianity like a cloak at times. We slip this cloak on when we walk into the presence of a certain individual, or they walk into the presence, our presence. And we are sanctimonious, and we can just talk the language, and they wouldn't know the difference. And our heart is sinful. And we can't wait for them to leave to say what we want to say. And years ago, I'm so thankful in our home that I was brought up short with this very thing. We had a couple come to our home, and we were given to hospitality. It's the, one of the true tests of a woman of God. How do you handle hospitality? Very grateful that the word, the first mention in the Word of God on hospitality is just be hospitable. Then do it ungrudgingly. Sounds easy, doesn't it? Be lovers of hospitality, he said. Lover. How do you become a lover? Well, you fall in love. That's how you become a lover. So I have to fall in love with being hospitable. And you take the bitter along with the sweet and the good along with the bad, but you keep your cool. And so I learned. But this couple came, and we rushed to the door, and we hugged them and kissed them and told them how anxious we'd been for them to come. And it was true. We had just really looked forward to this couple's coming. Well, they had hardly gotten over the threshold and of the door, and it was still warm where they walked out. So I said to Dustin, now this is, I'm telling on myself, and it's a teary thing with me to think that I would do this, but I did. And I'd like to say it was when I was young, but it was just me. I was young, but it was just showed my heart. I said, did you notice that he couldn't answer anything? You ask him a question and she answered it. And Dawson didn't say anything. I said, well, didn't you notice this we are? Did you notice that he couldn't do anything right? So Dawson just slowly, he gave me enough rope and I hung myself. I really did. So he just sat me down on the couch there. He said, which one of you is worse, you or, he said her name, but I'll say the wife. I said, well, I don't even enter the picture. He said, you don't? I said, I didn't say anything when they were here that was out of place. He said, well, you are now. He said, after you've spent some time with the Lord, I'd like you to share with me what he said to you about it. I remember Harvey Oslin had a very difficult time after Dawson's death. Dawson was hard on him. Very hard. But you see, Dawson knew a good man when he saw him, and he knew the potential that was there. And so he dug deep. And Harv needed it. He really did. And one day Harv came to me and shared again with me, but in detail. And I listened to him carefully, and when he finished, I said, you know, Harv, if you think Dawson gave it to you hard, he gave it to me much harder. And you know why he gave it to us so hard? And he says, why? I said, because he loved us. He loved you. He loved you. That's why. And he saw the potential. You know, when God looked at Saul, whose name became Paul, He didn't see this blustering, tempestuous individual that fired up at nothing, screamed and hollered and everything else. No, he saw the finished product. And so I said, with you, Dawson looked down the road a few years and knew what you were becoming. I'm sure he did. And don't you ever forget that the true test of a man is how he takes rebuke and correction. It's one of them. It's also for you and me as women. I think I'm safe in sharing this. 15 years before Dawson died, he said to me one evening, when you get the children in bed, Lila, whenever he said Lila, I really straightened up and took notice, you know. He said, I would like to see you in the green room. Well, I got the children to bed, and so I went down. And he said to me, darling, how would you like, now this is the word that bothers some people, and please don't jump at any conclusions now. I'm a mother now. I was, of several children. And Dawson said, how would you like to go on the spot training and I would be your teacher? Well, I knew a little bit about on-the-spot training because of others that had been on the spot and been trained. And I thought I already was on the spot with training. Well, it took me 6 weeks to say yes. I called him one day. His office was 8 miles away. And I said, sweetheart, I'd like to see you today. And he said, I know what you want to see me about. And I said, no, you don't. He says, yes, I do. I says, what is it? And he told me. It was right. So I went down, and we knelt in his office and sealed it. And I took 6 weeks to count the cost. I will be eternally grateful for those 15 years. And I'll tell you something, if he was still living, it would still be going on. God knows what he's about. It takes lots of hammering, and it takes pruning. It takes whippings. It takes blistering sun and heavy winds. And when a man wants a tongue for his wagon, he doesn't go down into the cove to find the hardwood. He goes to the top of the mountain where the tree has bet with the winds and the storms have come. And it's toughened that up. And Dawson was getting me ready for the biggest push of my life. And that was to do it alone, but never alone. I'll never leave you. I'll never forsake you. One of the things Dawson did during those 15 years was said, how do you take disappointment? He said to me. Another one. When your opinion isn't asked, how do you react? And up till then, I used to say, you know, I'm going to join this navigation club because then maybe I'd know what's going on. You know, something would be set at the table, and it was foreign to me, and I lived there, and I lived with Dawson. And I thought I knew what was going on, and so often something new was sprung, and he got sick of hearing it. So up in our room, fortunately he was in our room, Dawson just said, why don't you just drop that from your vocabulary? So he asked me, when my opinion isn't there, when I'm ignored, do you ever lie? Lila, Do you ever exaggerate? Do you ever procrastinate? Do you ever cheat on your Bible study? He hit where it hurt the most. I tell you, I wouldn't trade places. There's no one I'd trade places with. No one. No one. And years ago, Georgia Yoakum, she was Georgia McDavid then, she still is my dearest girlfriend in all the world. Bruce was just a tiny little infant, 3 or 4 weeks old when I met her. So I've been knowing her 44 years. And she knelt with me one day for prayer. And all of a sudden, I hear her ask God to give me a girl's work. And I thought, I wonder why she doesn't pray for herself. You know, I had my hands full. And how on earth am I going to have a girl's work? Well, it didn't take very long for me to get on the bandwagon and start asking God for a girl's work with her, for me. Well, you know, when you want to go into girl's work, you want to leave home. You never ever have your girl's work at home. You go away, don't you? Have your Bible class. Not for this girl. I was to live 7 days a week, 24 hours a day with women. For many years, it was 10 grown women and 11 grown men. Lauren and Lucy lived with us 10 or 11 months of the 30 with 3 children, and we had 4. Well, we had 5, but 4 were active. It just had to be. My life had to be just opened up in the raw. And by the one who loved me the most in all the world. The one that loved me the most. I was given word study. I was given topics to study from the word. He put me in the book of James. What's the one theme in the book of James? What member of your body? The tongue. A world of fire. I've never ever had a temper. I never have. I don't take for granted I can't, so I pray about it every day. I'm not given to depression. I've never been depressed. But sometimes it's what you don't say. And when you live in a home where there are grown people like we lived in, they saw what we did and what we didn't do. They heard what we said, and they also heard what we didn't say. And the true test of a God, that leads to godliness is the way you and I live in our home and how we serve others. And the girls who worked for me, I say who worked for who, but they were there and we were partners. And they were taught very early when they came to live with us and taught by me that we are here to lift the hands of Dawson and the crew. So we're here to serve. Regardless of the hour, day or night, regardless of changing plans, which we had to do often. Have you ever had someone call you and say, you know, I'll be home for lunch and bring 26 with me? Have you cooked 3 breakfasts different times in the morning, any of you? Have you had your day planned and your ironing? The 3 of you, your 2 helpers and yourself. And the dining room is just lined with our ironing. And the phone rings and I go to it. And Dawson's bringing 12 men for dinner. And I proceeded to tell Dawson. I wasn't enthusiastic, by the way. And I proceeded to tell him I had a headache. You know, if I hadn't told him I had a headache, he wouldn't have known, you know. so I had to tell him. The 12 came. The girls, I just asked them, I just said, we're going to have to put our ironing up because Dawson's bringing 12 men for lunch. And so up in our room that night, he says, sweetheart, you always come through with the most glorious meal and serve beautifully, but you spoil it all by your first impressions that you leave. First impression. He got me on my first impression and on my facial expression. I needed it. I needed a strong hand in my life, and don't you think God didn't know that and gave it to me. After Dawson was gone one day, Lauren said, you know, Jim Downing just shared something with me, Lila, and I'd like to share it with you. He said that, you know, Lila's used to a strong hand in her life, and so Lauren said, maybe I should be the strong hand in your life. And I said, do you have something in mind that I need in my life that isn't there and that you would like to instill in me? He said, no, I don't. I said, why do I need a stronger hand than the living God's hand? He took the strong hand that I had and left me to walk alone with the Lord. And he couldn't answer. And I said, no, I think you have a job taking care of Lucy, and I'll just go it alone with the Lord. If I make mistakes, I can correct them and go on. But I have enough from the life of Dawson and the hand of Dawson and his graciousness to me and his kindness to me and what he taught me that will last me till the Lord takes me home. And it doesn't mean that I won't make mistakes, because I'm one big mistake looking for something to happen. But God, and I don't think that any married man should become the strong hand in my life. You see, he couldn't fire me because he never hired me. I was there before he was. And I said to him every once in a while, kiddingly, of course. Alone, I have learned so much from God. Really. I shut myself up in my own home when I lived alone for many days. And I lived in 1st and 2nd Corinthians. You see, girls, for 7 years, I had to take 1 Corinthians 13, and I read it 7 times a day for 7 years. Why? Because it wasn't true in my life. And I wanted to saturate. I can say it backwards, I do believe, the chapter. Along with that, I took in Colossians 3 that let your conversation be always with grace, seasoned with salt. That's loving kindness and tenderness. Why? Oh, so that you'll know how to answer every woman and every man that asks a question of you. Let your conversation be always with grace, seasoned with salt. I had to take it and review it daily. When I got through with 1 Corinthians, I asked the Lord what I should be reading now that I needed, and he directed me to Philemon's, just the only one chapter. Well, when I got down to where Paul says, now if he's offended you, speaking of Onesimus, that he had led to Christ, his slave, and he was sending him back to be entreated as they would entreat Paul when he came home. And he said, now, if he has done anything or does anything that you don't like or that's wrong, you just put it to my account. I didn't know anything about that. Put it to my account. I'm going to take your faults and I'm going to take them for you. Do you know anything about that? Read Philemon's 1. I challenge you to read it every day. From the first, almost the first day of my conversion, I've been reading a proverb every day. The only time I didn't read it was when I had surgery and couldn't, and it was read to me. But I've never missed a day in a proverb. And for you mothers that are here, there's no book on child raising like the book of Proverbs. It'll do something for you. It'll give you understanding far beyond your wisdom, your years. Huh, what time's breakfast? But girls, in your own home, in your own situation, you girls who have apartments, you girls who live with someone or have a boss, who have a husband, start now becoming a servant. If you want to be great, you want to be successful, and you want to be godly, it's one way to do it. Takes lots of oil, takes lots of time on your knees. And if you forget anything else and everything else that's been said by me, please do not forget this. Unless you have a daily encounter with a living God in the Word of God, you're a lost cause. This is food for your soul. It gives you direction. It's a comforter. It's a guidance. It's a revealer and a healer. There's no greater joy than to know the God of this book. Not about Him, but to know Him. And let your time grow. Take protracted time where you're just alone with the lover of your soul. And you will find that He will be to you what He has and is to me. And that's my lover, my husbandman, my guide, my protector, my shield, my all in all, my strength to strength, my daily portion. And I have, years ago, I fell in love with a lover of my soul. And He's made the difference in my life. And He has given victory in a daily walk with Him. Oh, not easy, not without heartache, not without tears, not without changing plans or change of plans, not without turning about face and heading back from whence I came. Not without suffering, a little suffering. Not without taking things from me. But you know, you cannot give God, but it's fun trying. And I'll stop with this. He maketh no mistake. This is the poem that I put in my folder the night before I left to go to Scroon Lake. My father's way may twist and turn. My heart may throb and ache. But in my soul, I'm glad I know He maketh no mistake. Oh, my cherished plans may go astray. And my heart may... My cherished plans may go astray, my hopes may fade away, but still I'll trust my Lord to lead, for He doth know the way. Though night be dark and it may seem that day will never break, I'll pin my faith, my all in Him. He maketh no mistake. Oh, there's so much now I cannot see, my eyesight's far too dim. But come what may, I'll simply trust and leave it all with Him. For by and by the mist will lift, and plain it all He'll make. Through all the way, though dark to me, He made not one mistake. I love you dearly, and I'll be praying for you faithfully.